Thank you for spending your Tuesday, the 22nd of May, tuned to KHSU. I'm Wendy Butler, and this is Art Waves. Later on today's program, the 20th annual North Coast Open Studios is the first two weekends in June, and I'll have the third of my Open Studios charter artist interviews, this time with Eureka oil painter Kathy O'Leary, whose Eureka studio will be open the first weekend. First today on Art Waves, Del Arte International School of Physical Theater students graduating from the MFA program present Crossing the Vortex Thesis Festival. It showcases original works titled The Hempen Jig and Cluck Boom Bloom, which perform this Thursday, May 24th and Saturday the 26th at 8 p.m. The works Singularity and Anime are this Friday, May 25th and this Sunday, May 27th at 8 p.m. All these plays at the Carlo Theater at Del Arte in Blue Lake. The fifth work, Let Me Out, an immersive memory play, is off-site from Del Arte and has very limited seating. It's scheduled for today and tomorrow at 8 p.m. and Saturday and Sunday at 2. I have two of the festival performers in the studio. Eric William Jones, who is a collaborator in Let Me Out, and David Powell of Anime, which has a hashtag before the word. And David goes first and explains why.
Anime is a new work devised by myself and three other non-Del Arte community theater members. It's part of my master thesis project, and coming into the program late this year, actually, I have the opportunity to work with some local actors that have hopped onto this project.
And who are they?
So we have Jeremy Webb, and we have Elizabeth Headland, and Andre LaRocque. So three fantastic people, really game for hopping into the Del Arte way of creating theater, which is different.
Which is different.
Yes.
It's very much up to you.
Yes.
It's your the actor creator.
Yes, exactly. Yes, actor creator.
Anime is not a made-up term, and it's not anime.
Right.
It's anime. Now, anime is a psychological term. I wanted you to talk about what that means.
Absolutely. So it's a lack of standards in a social group, or a lack of understanding that can exist within a social circle or a subset. In this particular case, it's dealing with white male privilege, really, cis white male privilege. Being cis white male, I am aware, or I try to be aware, of this as part of my reality. And so bringing this into a show and talking about it and the dangers and the hidden dangers of this aspect of a whole massive culture feels to me to be incredibly important to look at and talk about, as it's tied in with the Me Too movement.
How is it tied in with the Me Too movement?
So in this piece, the protagonist-antagonist character is interested in helping. He wants to help. He wants to lend his voice to movements. He wants to be there at the rallies. He wants to help people figure out what they should say, on and on and on, when the people who are involved in the movement are saying, actually, we would like to speak now. We would like our voices to be heard. We would like this to be our time. And he says, yes, that's fine, but I want to help you, so let me tell you how this can be your time. Let me tell you how you can. And what happens to people who are caught up in that world? In the piece, it is the Me Too movement. Yes.
Oh, okay.
So it's a character trying to come into the Me Too movement and lend his voice And in this particular instance, it's a time when a very empowered woman is taking charge and saying, right now, we're looking into women's aspect of the Me Too movement. Yes, it is a movement for all survivors, but we're investigating women's voices right now. And this character steps forward with a male survivor, actually, and says, well, let me push this person forward, and you have to respect him, and you have to let him in the movement. You have to hear his voice. And so what happens in the conflict between outing someone who is not ready to be outed, on top of a cis white male pushing his agenda and what he wants into the movements of other people, the inability to respect and listen to the voices of the world around him, and what consequences come to everyone involved because of that.
But the intention of this person, this pushy person, mm-hmm. Played by you?
Yes.
This pushy person is not to cause harm necessarily.
Right. It's through his ignorance and inability to hear what people are really asking for, his inability to understand the world around him.
And why were you and your group inspired to do a piece like this?
Well, on top of it being a relevant subject today, you know, being who I am in the world, I've found myself having conversations not only with my own friend circles, but with people that are outside of my normal social circles, having conversations with amazing and beautiful trans people who are finding their place in the world, speaking with friends of mine who have gone through the Me Too movement, who are active in the Me Too movement, who have been through a lot of things that I myself have not been through. Some things I have, some I haven't. And realizing through the conversations with these people how my preconceptions of what my place in the world is very different than I assume it to be. That the idea of lending a hand, of helping, of well, here's an idea, or, oh, that's really interesting, let me tell you what I think about that. How something that seems to be so simple in my world and in my reality is absolutely privilege, is absolutely me pushing my voice and my agenda and my opinions into places and on people who don't need me to be saying that. And so out of that, those conversations I had with a lot of incredible, brilliant, beautiful people, and beginning to really try to look in the mirror at myself and my friends and how I live in the world, and realizing, wow, I do need to look at myself, and when is it a genuine interest, and when is it friendship, and when is it conversation, and when is it privilege? And so taking that experience and these ideas and putting it into a play on stage to say, hey, we may think, or some people think, they may be doing right, they may be doing well, they're helping, is a theme that comes into this a lot. I'm helping, I want to help you, let me, when really it's continuing to put your nose in other people's business, continuing to push people in a way that you have no right to do.
What you're saying, I think, is a good lead-in to discussing Let Me Out.
Yes.
And Let Me Out. So, Eric, you are involved in Let Me Out. You're one of the actor creators of Let Me Out. Please tell us what Let Me Out is about.
Okay. Well, Let Me Out is an exploration of what it means to fuse live action role playing with live theater. So it's a piece that is immersive. And when I say that, I mean that there is really no divide between audience and performers, that audience members will have an opportunity to play characters in this world and to step forward and to actually have a say in what happens. So it's been a sort of work in progress for several years of fusing some of my passions in terms of theater, what is gripping, what has the potential to empower people to feel like they have a say and that they can make choices, and also my love of games, of what it means to play games, what it means to face challenges as a group, what it means to put yourself in somebody else's shoes.
Do you propose a game at the beginning, some kind of game? Do you set it up?
Yes, it's actually part of the lens of this project is through conventional escape rooms, which escape rooms are kind of a more recent phenomenon. They started out in East Asia, especially in China, but they've exploded throughout the world. And it's basically puzzle rooms that people, sometimes they're friends, sometimes they don't know each other at all, are all put in these specific spaces with puzzles that they have to work together to solve. And I was really interested in that because by playing a game together, even if people don't know each other, they're able to come together and bond quicker than they would otherwise. I can't remember who had this quote, but somebody says, you can have a conversation with someone and you'll know them fine, but if you play a game with them, you'll know them 100 times better. So I was really interested in how do we make theater into a game that people are excited to play and at the end feel like they had agency, that they had some power in this imagined world.
It's a puzzle that you give your participants, some kind of puzzle and a puzzle to do what, go where?
Sure. The premise is that there are six strangers locked in a room, and in order to escape the room, they have to discover who they are and what their past is and how they are all interrelated. So they wake in this room, and it is a room. It's not a theater. It's not going to happen on a stage. It's in almost a warehouse facility that we've converted into a fun space filled with memory. But it's about these people waking in this space that is filled with their lives. And it's about how they explore the space and how they discover that not only are they trapped in this space, they're trapped in time. That if they see the 60-minute timer projected onto the wall counting down, they realize that if they don't solve the puzzle, something bad is going to happen. And so it's about how these people come together and how they collectively unfold a story that has, it's a story of sorrow, of loss, of hope, and of struggle against seemingly insurmountable odds. There are moments that it is scripted, in that there are sort of moments that the three of us, myself, Marguerite Boissonnault from Utah, and Linnea Eterlid from Sweden, they're my collaborating artists. There are moments when the three of us each have specific characters that we have scenes that help to unfold the world. But then there are moments that are completely unscripted, that sometimes the characters, the players who are in this, will receive a card that has a simple objective. So it says, you know, console your daughter. You know, she's faced a lot of difficulty. Console her and convince her it's not your fault. So it's a sort of, that's where the role playing comes in.
And then you're going to invite people from the audience who you do not know.
Yes.
To collaborate or to collaborate and help push the story forward, right?
Exactly. And that's been most of our work, actually. It's more than half of our work has been, how do we structure this thing so that we as the players can make the audience members feel safe and that they can trust us, and that there is a time before we start where we will brief the players and explain the rules, which are, you know, they're minimal, but they're common sense rules, you know, consent when it comes to touch, what can be interacted with, just the premise of the world itself. But then also, how do we structure this piece so that people that it's almost like a clockmaker, that it's how do you make put the gears and the little wind up things in just the right place so that we can set it off, and that we are there to help to guide, that our job isn't necessarily to direct or to push, that we are there to allow people to explore.
Eric William Jones. Also here is David Powell. We're discussing the Crossing the Vortex Thesis Festival, written and performed by Delarte MFA soon-to-be graduates. I'm Wendy Butler, and this is Art Waves on KHSU. Eric responds first to my next question. And speaking of games, the game of life, but not necessarily the board game in this case, but going into, you're graduating from, you're an MFA graduate from Delarte, or you're soon to be.
Soon to be graduate, yes.
And so does this work that you and your collaborators created, does it remind you at all of how you're feeling, you know, preparing to leave, to graduate from Delarte and to go to who knows what?
Yes. And I think it's not only, you know, everybody sort of faces those challenges that they have to overcome, feeling trapped, feeling like they don't know what to do. There's definitely a sense of that, you know, being here for 3 years, really diving into the work, and now looking suddenly at this precipice that I'm rapidly approaching, and it's okay. Well, sometimes it's just about taking the leap and trusting that on the way down, you'll find a way to build a parachute. So yes, but then also it's, you know, in the world in general too, it's how do we all of us approach a sense, a seeming sense of powerlessness? That are we actually powerless? You know, there's a lot of things happening in the world right now that people feel like, oh, it's just politics, or oh, it's just pop culture. You know, there are things that we feel like are too big for us. But in actuality, a lot of times we don't ever address it. We don't ever approach it and try to make a change. And there are people who thankfully are doing that. And I want to encourage the people who still feel powerless in spite of all of this to take a step forward with that.
And also a question for you, David. Same question, really. This work, anime, mm-hmm. and does it is it in line to a certain extent with how you're feeling about graduating, being an MFA graduate from Del Arte?
That's a great question. In line so far as...
connect with.
It's absolutely
connected. That's what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, beyond the fact that it is our graduating thesis, but the school encourages, it guides, shapes, helps us find how we can connect with communities that we may not belong to directly, how we can engage people from that community in creating theater, and how we can create theater that is relevant to now, to the things that are happening, and how we can openly and honestly create a new work with the voices of not only ourselves, because of course our voice is going to exist in anything we build, but hearing other people and welcoming collaboration with other people. And so for me, this is a beautiful way to take that next step, to work on a piece where I really have invited and asked and been helped greatly by outside communities who have been willing to come in and help create this piece that I could never create on my own, at least not with any sort of genuine honesty other than my perspective.
And then it somehow, after you graduate from Del Arte, the piece also speaks to your connection with the world in general and discovering mm-hmm. the many ways you connect.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. And ways that I can connect in the future. Working on this project has changed the way that I at least try and want to listen in the world and be in the world, and parts of myself and the way that I live in the world that I have taken for granted for a very long time, I've gotten to take a very long, hard look at, which is important for everyone.
David Powell, whose work is titled Anime, and also Eric William Jones, who is in Let Me Out, an immersive memory play. The Del Arte students graduating from the MFA program present They're Crossing the Vortex Thesis Festival. Again, the plays The Hempen Jig and Cluck Boom Bloom perform this Thursday, May 24th and Saturday the 26th at 8 p.m. The works Singularity and Anime are this Friday, May 25th and this Sunday, May 27th at 8 p.m. All these plays at the Carlo Theater at Del Arte in Blue Lake. The fifth work, Let Me Out, an immersive memory play, is not at the Carlo Theater. It's off-site. It has very limited seating and is scheduled for today and tomorrow at 8 p.m., Saturday and Sunday at 2 p.m. For more information and reservations for this one, you should visit the Let Me Out Play page on Facebook. For more information and reservations for the other plays, you can phone 707-668-5663, or you can visit delarte.com. I'm Wendy Butler, and this is Art Waves on KHSU. The 20th Annual North Coast Open Studios will be held the first two weekends of June. Kathy O'Leary, an Open Studios charter artist, is open weekend one and has an Old Town Eureka studio, which I visited recently. I love that I have the opportunity to actually come out to studios and sit in the midst of the work that is complete and also the work that is being created. Because there's no better way than to talk about the process going toward completion than actually being in it. And so, Kathy, what I'm noticing with your work is we are surrounded by trees and hills. And all the way up to I don't know how many feet. You have very high ceiling, which is I'm thinking very nice for you, and good lighting coming mm-hmm. through both sides, right? And so yeah, so you have landscapes, but what is absent from the landscapes are the animals and people. I'm not going to say absent is living things, because obviously the trees are living. And so why is it that you choose to go that route?
Well, I think it's my own personal aesthetic. I mean, I've painted different subject matter over the years, and I kept coming back to the landscape, the scenery, either around my hometown, Eureka, or the Bay, or on travels beyond Humboldt County. And when I'm looking for something to paint, I just, my eyes and my idea of composing something that I think is beautiful in a painting, it's always the landscape, and there's always trees in it, apparently. I haven't noticed until recently how much I've been attracted to trees themselves, but I've always loved trees, and more I'm starting to just focus on trees, the oak trees in particular of California. So it's like I'm kind of narrowing my focus and just painting something that touches me, that I really love.
Do you recall, or you said you were born and raised in Eureka?
No, I was born in California, in Gilroy, but I moved up here in 69, so I've been here a while.
Do you recall when you were younger, if you spent a lot of time absent from people in the woods?
Nature. I loved outdoors. I lived in Cupertino near San Jose, which is now just a huge urban area. But when I grew up, it was orchards and creeks a lot. And so that's where I played. And so I would say, yes, I was out in nature a lot and outside a lot. I didn't play with dolls. I was much more interested in tree forts or, you know, rocks and things like that, and the creeks and the lizards and the wildflowers, everything that came with it. So that's just kind of where I guess came from, that experience.
Did the drawing, sketching, did it come easily to you?
Yes, pretty much, yeah. I did stuff as a kid, but I think in high school I found I really liked it. Then in junior college, and then when I went to four-year college, I was going to be a commercial artist, which I found I really liked the fine art classes I was taking much better than the commercial arts. So I thought, I can't make a living being an artist because you can only do that with commercial art. So I kind of dropped it for quite a while and then came back, and I hadn't lost my skills. I still could draw. I still have that brain-hand coordination thing that goes on when you're painting or drawing what you see.
You've been doing your oil paintings for at least 20 years, 30?
Yeah. My art really was a midlife career change. So I would say I've been in this building for 24 years, in this studio. And I had a studio for a couple years at home before I moved here, and then it was watercolor. Once I came here, it was hard to do oil and watercolor, and so I switched to oil, which is the medium that I just fell in love with immediately when I tried it.
Well, two things. One, why do you prefer oil over watercolor?
That's a good question. I think for me, in the way I approached watercolor, it was too tight. I was being too, I wanted to be freer with it. When I tried oil, I liked being able to move the paint around. And although I still could be considered, my style might be considered somewhat tight, for me it's a lot looser than watercolor. And you can correct something where in watercolor you can't. So it was a good learning tool for me, watercolor and drawing and getting back into my art. But once I discovered oil, that was it. That was like, I just fell in love with the medium. And now I'm branching out a little bit with tempera paint for sketching. You know, I do big sketches with it, but it's kind of fun because I have to work even looser.
Yeah. Tell more about what tempera paint is for those who might not really, because I know with oil takes a long time to dry. It's, right. I guess, got more substance to it than watercolor. Watercolor is quick drying. Mm-hmm. Drying. What's tempera?
It's quick drying, and it's opaque, unlike watercolor, which is generally transparent and translucent. But so I have to put brush strokes over another color, and some of the color comes through, which I really like. And once I put the stroke down, I can't change it. I can't do anything with it, which I like too. And if I want to change it, I paint over it, and then so some of the older strokes will come through, which I do like. And like I said, it's very opaque. So, you know, you start with the darks like you do with oil, and then put the lights over that.
I was wondering if you feel that your work over the past 20 or so years has changed at all. And if so, how has your work changed or developed?
Well, of course it's changed. I like to think that it has. But, well, I think I've become more confident. I've come to understand color a lot better and how to use it. I think I take more risks with it because I'm more comfortable, and I feel, you know, it's my skill level that I've been doing this so long that it's like I feel I can try this or try that. And the other part of it is accept failures, like, okay, this didn't work. But before it was like that always worried me so much. Now I can just stack up my failures and go, okay, I think I learned something from that. Let's try it again or try something else that... it's just come so much easier because I've done it for so long. And, you know, it's hard to say. I think that the change would be that I'm more skilled, that I'm a better painter. I understand composition better, color better, and over the years it's evolved so that I feel like I'm just a better painter overall.
Why is it that you want to open up your studio for Open Studios?
Well, I really love the idea that people in our communities can come in and see what we do and see that we work, that we're workers, basically. We work hard. And we also work by ourselves all the time. You know, it's a very individual endeavor. And, you know, Stock Schluter's just down the hall, but we hardly ever see each other unless we're both passing each other in the hallway. So it's a very kind of an isolated experience. And so by opening our doors, I think we invite people in to share, because I think most artists want to share. We're doing something to put it out there beyond just our four walls. And so it's a wonderful opportunity to share with people and to just see people that I've known. I've been here a long time in Humboldt County, and so seeing people that I've known for years, and maybe only see them once a year when they come in. And I just enjoy it, and it's very stimulating. I also get people who will come and say, I know where there's this great stand of oak trees, or there's this beautiful scene, and I'll make notes, and I've actually followed up on them because I can't be everywhere and know everything. So I always get some good ideas and from people who visit, too.
Eureka oil painter Kathy O'Leary, Open Studios charter artist. For information on locations for all participating North Coast Open Studios artists and other events associated with the 20th annual events, first two weekends of June, you can visit northcoastopenstudios.com. That's it for today's program. Please join me again Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. You can also listen to Art Waves anytime online at khsu.org. And Art Waves podcasts are available for download from iTunes. Until next time, I'm Wendy Butler, and thank you for listening.